It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton testifies about Benghazi. Mrs. Clinton telling a Republican-led congressional committee that she has lost more sleep than all of you put together over the deadly 2012 attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. Mrs. Clinton was the sole witness Thursday during an 11-hour congressional hearing on the attack that left four Americans dead, including U.S. Ambassador to Libya, Christopher Stevens.
Let's be worthy of the trust the American people have bestowed upon us. They expect us to lead, to learn the right lessons, to rise above partisanship, and to reach for statesmanship.
Republicans allege there are many inconsistencies in Mrs. Clinton's account on what happened and what could have been done to prevent it. A joint rescue mission by U.S. and Iraqi Kurdish fighters freed about 70 hostages facing execution by Islamic State militants in northern Iraq. One American serviceman was killed, becoming the first member of the U.S. military to die in action in the year-long campaign against IS extremists. Military officials at the Pentagon said the hostages had been held in an Islamic State prison. The U.S. says Iraqi units captured five Islamic State fighters and that a number of other IS activists were killed. A new report says 30,000 people in South Sudan's Unity State are on the brink of starvation and death amid growing hunger in the war-ravaged country. The report from UN-backed food security experts warns four Unity State counties could slide into famine conditions by the end of the year if there is not any immediate humanitarian assistance. This is VOA. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry voiced some cautious optimism that a solution can be found to defuse deadly Israeli-Palestinian violence that's left at least 8 Israelis and 50 Palestinians dead. Following a 4-hour meeting Thursday with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Berlin, Secretary Kerry said some proposals may be offered in the coming days that will have an impact on stopping the unrest. VOA's Pam Dawkins reports.
Secretary of State Kerry told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, "We know each other well and have the ability to make a difference," as they sat down for talks in Berlin Thursday.
It is absolutely critical to end all incitement, to end all violence, and to find a road forward to build the possibility, which is not there today, for a larger process.
Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu continues to point a finger of blame at Palestinians, saying there is no question that the wave of attacks was driven by incitement. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, Berlin.
Secretary Kerry will meet with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas on Saturday. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N. slammed Russia's military intervention in Syria, saying it's made the Islamic State terrorists stronger and allowing them to seize more Syrian territory. Ambassador Samantha Power told a meeting of the U.N. Security Council on the Middle East Thursday that Russia's intervention worsened an already dire situation. It said, according to the Syrian Network for Human Rights, the Russian airstrikes have hit schools and markets around Aleppo, killing at least 100 civilians. The World Health Organization is stepping up efforts to control multiple cholera outbreaks in Africa and the Middle East to prevent the disease from spreading and threatening the health of thousands. Lisa Schlein has details.
More than 10,700 cholera cases and 170 deaths are reported in 5 countries in the Eastern Mediterranean and African regions: Iraq, Bahrain, Kuwait, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Tanzania. The WHO team leader in the Department of Pandemic and Epidemic Diseases, Dominique Legros, says he is particularly worried about the cholera situation in the African region, where the worst El Nino conditions in the past 20 years are forecast. He says this weather phenomenon is expected to trigger torrential rains in the coming months and cause an upsurge in waterborne diseases, including cholera. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Southwestern Mexico is bracing for powerful Hurricane Patricia. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, October 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda says it has begun withdrawing its troops from South Sudan.
The rebel has been demanding the withdrawal of Ugandan troops from South Sudan. And now it has happened. So let them now show their political will to implement the agreement.
Aten Wek Aten is South Sudan's presidential spokesman. Three UN agencies warn parts of South Sudan face imminent food shortage. Political tensions rise ahead of Uganda's 2016 presidential election. University student protest in South Africa shows no sign of abating. And Nigeria's military issues what it calls its last warning to Boko Haram militants to surrender.
They should also immediately and unconditionally release all the abducted persons with them in their custody, including the Chibok schoolgirls they abducted. Otherwise, they'll be facing the full wrath of our military might.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is Nigeria's military spokesman, and human rights groups say Cameroon's prisons are severely overcrowded. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda says it has begun the voluntary withdrawal of its troops from South Sudan. The withdrawal had been a key demand of rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar during peace negotiations to end the South Sudan conflict. South Sudan presidential spokesman Aten Wek Aten says the pullout is a demonstration of his government's commitment to fully implement the peace agreement signed last August between President Salva Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar.
This is the process that was provided for in the agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan that has called for the Ugandan forces and all other forces to withdraw from South Sudan. And they have now started to voluntarily pull out from South Sudan. This is a part of the implementation of the agreement. And what it means is that the government is serious to implement the agreement.
Now, how long will it take them to completely withdraw from South Sudan?
The first week of November, we'll see the final Ugandan troops pulling out from South Sudan, with exceptions of the contingency, which is of Ugandan troops in Western Equatoria, which is for a different purpose. They are there for LRA, you know, to pursue LRA.
Now, the SPLM in opposition, or the rebels, have said that the withdrawal of the Ugandan troops will be a significant boost to the restoration of peace and security in South Sudan as part of the process to restore law and order and maintain peace. What is the government's position on this statement?
Well, the rebel has been demanding the withdrawal of Ugandan troops from South Sudan, and now it has happened. So let them now show their political will to implement the agreement as Ugandan troops are out of South Sudan.
Given that this is the time period within which they are supposed to leave, what should the people of South Sudan expect going forward in regards to the implementation of this peace process?
The people of South Sudan are really willing to ensure that peace agreement is fully implemented by both parties in the agreement. And the government of South Sudan has shown that, it is willing to implement. And people of South Sudan wanted peace. The earlier the parties in the agreement for the resolution of conflict in South Sudan, the earlier they start implementing it, the better.
Aid groups have said that ongoing conflict between in some parts of the country is preventing them from providing the much-needed assistance to these South Sudanese citizens who are caught in the crossfire of this ongoing conflict.
Of course, I agree with the aid workers, the humanitarian, to take aid to where the government, controls. Only that there are pockets of rebels that they attacked the aid workers in some places. The precaution the government is always giving. And for the government is 100%, willing to see the aid being taken to the needy.
Aten Wek Aten is South Sudan's presidential spokesman. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Juba. Three UN agencies say parts of South Sudan face imminent famine unless urgent action is taken to get aid to people in need. The warning comes after the IPC released its latest assessment of the situation in South Sudan. The IPC analysis found that 3.9 million people in South Sudan are at the highest level of food insecurity. As Lucy Pony reports for VOA from Juba, the report says children from war-affected areas are particularly hard hit.
It was UNICEF, the World Food Programme, and the Food and Agriculture Organization that raised the alarm about looming famine in parts of South Sudan. They are calling on the parties to the conflict, which was supposed to have ended in August with the signing of a peace deal, to grant urgent and unrestricted access to high-risk areas, including parts of Unity States, where the IPC says at least 30,000 people face imminent starvation and death. UNICEF's Tyler says some villages in Unity and Upper Nile states have been cut off from receiving aid or even assessment visits from humanitarian workers for nearly 2 years.
So in some cases, we haven't been able to go since the beginning of the conflict, and some cases we have not been able to go for over a year.
Tyler says when the peace agreement was signed in August, the UN agencies had expected it would become easier to reach the areas that were cut off by fighting. But she says nothing has changed in the 2 months since the peace deal was signed and a ceasefire declared. Tyler says children have been particularly hard hit by the crisis.
We are seeing children coming, malnourished. Children are sick, children who have been traumatized. These children have lost everything. You know, they haven't been able to go to school.
Tyler says an estimated 4 million people have not had access to healthcare throughout the 22-month-old conflict. She says people have lost their sources of income and their hope for the future.
So they've lost everything, become traumatized, and these people are more at risk of getting their health condition getting worse.
World Food Programme regional spokeswoman Charles McDonough says unless aid agencies are given urgent and unrestricted access to all parts of South Sudan, there could be catastrophic hunger in places. She cites the example of Unity State, where
there are already estimated to be some 30,000 people who are experiencing what amounts to starvation in those areas. And unless agencies are able to reach people to provide assistance, the situation could deteriorate even worse in the coming months.
McDonough says access has been cut off to areas in Unity, Jonglei, and Upper Nile states. She says the international community must support humanitarian agencies with the resources they need to reach people across the country. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
Civil society leaders are calling for calm in Uganda, where political tensions are rising ahead of national elections set for February 2016. Witnesses say police are using heavy-handed tactics to break up opposition gatherings, and both the opposition and the government are allegedly recruiting youth militias to fight in the streets. Lizabeth Pollard reports from Kampala.
Confrontations between police officers and opposition activists are on the increase in Uganda. There have been two major clashes in the eastern towns of Soroti and Jinja, as well as smaller incidents around the country. Witnesses say the clashes largely stem from police trying to break up opposition gatherings. Human Rights Watch and the UN Human Rights Office recently both condemned what they call inhumane treatment of detainees by police and the use of tear gas and rubber bullets. There are also reports that militias and youth brigades are being formed throughout the country for use during the election campaign. Human rights lawyer Nicholas Opio says it appears that both the ruling NRM party and the opposition are escalating the tensions.
First, the NRM has reactivated those informal groups, the militias, and they are being trained with state resources. But we've also seen the increased recruitment of what you call crime preventers. These crime preventers are passed out singing songs of praise of President Museveni, wearing NRM t-shirts. These, in my view, are agencies of violence. The opposition have also responded, training their own militias and youth groups. These are all youth groups that have been very violently confronting authorities during demonstrations.
The government says the crime preventers are there to supplement the police during the electoral period, while the main opposition FDC party denies recruiting militia. The FDC says the police are using the militia allegation as an excuse to undermine their campaigning, including arresting party leaders on October 10th. Ugandan police spokesman Fred Enanga says militia activity prompted the police to crack down on a recent meeting in Jinja hosted by presidential aspirant Amama Mbabazi.
The intelligence that we had in that operation was that they are a group of militias, including Iraqi returnees, Afghanistan returnees, that had been recruited among the security ranks of the Honorable John Patrick Amama Mbabazi. And these are, of course, militias that had advanced techniques in military tactics. And, of course, they confronted our officers.
And Mbabazi's spokesperson says there were no militia at the Jinja event. Meanwhile, rights group Privacy International released a report this month saying that the government has installed surveillance software in hotels and government buildings to spy on journalists and political opponents. The government says the documents in the report are not authentic, pointing out what they say are falsified letterheads and misspelled names. Privacy International is standing by its report and has called for a parliamentary investigation into the use of spyware in Uganda. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today's Friday, October 23rd. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, and Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The Nigerian army has issued what it calls its last warning to Boko Haram militants to lay down their weapons, renounce violence, and unconditionally release all hostages, including the Chibok schoolgirls abducted over a year ago. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman tells reporter Peter Clotty that the army is on course to meet President Muhammadu Buhari's directive to defeat Boko Haram by the end of the year.
We were issuing a series of warning to Boko Haram terrorists to, you know, lay down their arms. And unfortunately, they have not been amenable to our warning, even though we have quite a number of them who have surrendered, who heeded to the warning. But up to now, the leadership is still adamant, and hence we are not even appealing. We are appealing to international communities and the world at large to kindly pursue them so that and their collaborators to desist from acts of terrorism and they should also renounce their membership of the terrorist organization forthwith. And in this warning, we are also telling them that we have closed up with them and because what they are doing is not good, and they should, as part of the condition, they should also immediately and unconditionally release all the abducted persons with them in their custody, including the Chibok schoolgirls they abducted. Otherwise, they'll be facing the full wrath of our military might. So basically, that is what the warning is all about. We hope and pray that they will heed to it. Otherwise, there will be dire consequences to the Boko Haram terrorists.
Colonel Usman, as you stated earlier, the army, or for that matter, the military, has issued a series of warnings to these Boko Haram militants. They have refused to heed to them. What is going to be different this time? Because the suicide bombings seem to be going on. They've been carrying sporadic attacks here and there, although not on a massive scale like they used to. But what is different this time?
What is different, of course, is the fact that we have now closed up with them. They are sandwiched inside their main den, which is Sambisa Forest. We have surrounded them, and we want them to unconditionally release all abducted persons and to surrender themselves. Otherwise, we will be forced with no other option than to continue to bombard them till we defeat them. Remember again, we have a deadline to meet up with, you know, to defeat them before the end of the year, and we must ensure that that mandate is achieved.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is Nigeria's military spokesman. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Student protests in South Africa have shown no sign of stopping. The students have marched on major political landmarks to demand an end to tuition hikes. VOA's Anita Powell attended a protest in Johannesburg and brings us this report.
That's the sound of 2,000 angry South African university students and supporters who shut down a Johannesburg city block Thursday to demand that the ruling party deliver on its promise of free higher education. The protest comes more than a week after students at Johannesburg's University of the Witwatersrand first rallied against a proposed 10% tuition and fee hike. Protests over university costs have since spread across the country, forcing 14 institutions to temporarily close. Students are now taking their grievances to what many say is the responsible party, the ruling African National Congress. On Thursday, they gathered outside ANC headquarters in central Johannesburg as local police watched from the sidelines. University of the Witwatersrand law student Tetelo Mashishi stood among the crowd, singing along to old ANC anthems, which, in previous decades, were used to protest the oppressive apartheid system.
They are the people who need to listen to us. The vice chancellor has heard us. Now it's time for the government to hear us, for the president to address us, for the president to hear, because it's a national crisis. If all the universities are going through it, clearly there's something wrong and that needs to be fixed.
ANC General Secretary Gwede Mantashe, who attended Thursday's protest but did not speak, said earlier that the mounting protests were indeed a national crisis. But in a statement, he pointed the blame back at university management, accusing them of hiking fees unilaterally and excluding poor black students. Leonda Tolo, an accounting student, says he thinks the ANC should finally deliver on its old promise of free education.
I think it's useless to say they must reduce, because firstly, when ANC was campaigning, they promised us free quality education. And then I think now it's time for them to give that free education they promised us.
But South Africa's government says it doesn't have the money for that. Student leaders say that at a minimum, they want the tuition hikes canceled. Students and university management meet Friday with President Jacob Zuma to further discuss the matter. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Human rights groups in Cameroon say prisons constructed for 500 detainees are housing more than 3,000 people, many of whom can be held for years without charge in inhumane conditions. The government says it is working on solutions. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde Prison.
Aristos Beba has been locked up at the Kondenge Central Prison for 5 years. The 26-year-old says he has never stood trial.
My elder brother accused me of stealing money from the house, and I was taken here. I've been beaten up several times here. I had to clean the toilet every time. Any small food they bring for me here, they take everything. I don't have anything. I'm really suffering here.
Kondenge Prison was constructed for 750 inmates, but now holds more than 4,000 men, women, and children. Angelina Dufay has been detained here since 2013 with her then 2-week-old baby. She was sentenced to 3 years for aggravated theft. Cameroon National Institute of Statistics reports there are about 30,000 people held in the country's 78 prisons. The law requires police to transfer a detainee to prison 24 hours after an arrest. Chairman of Cameroon's National Commission on Human Rights and Freedoms, Chemuta Divine.
Not all the persons in prisons are criminals. There are too many people that will just find themselves in through the system that is in place. You see young people who should be out helping in production and improving upon the economy. They are there in their great numbers. They are tortured. Prisons should not be torture centers. We have said this clear and clear.
Cameroon's Secretary of State in charge of Penitentiary Administration, Do Jerum, says reforms are planned.
We have the vision of reintroducing what used to be known as production prisons, so that by the time the inmates come out of prison, out of detention, they have known certain traits which will help them to be rehabilitated in their society.
The government denies accusations from rights groups that refugees from the CAR and Boko Haram suspects are swelling prison populations. But Cameroon's government spokesperson, Issa Chiruma, says they are aware of congestion and inhumane treatment.
This is a problem that we know very well. And you said you are perfectly right. Justice delay is justice denied. The government is committed, is engaged to speed up the trial of all of those, not only Boko Haram. We have our brothers, our sisters who are in jail for giving time and unfortunately who are not tried for many reasons. Understandable and justifiable reason.
Chiruma says financial constraints are holding up construction of more prisons. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. South Africa and North Korea drew 1-1 at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Concepcion, Chile on Thursday. Meanwhile, today, Friday, Guinea play Brazil as defending champions Nigeria tackle Croatia. Tomorrow, Saturday, Mali engage Honduras as South Africa face Russia on Sunday. In Tunisia, Morocco outclassed defending champions Libya 4-0 in an African Nations Championship Chan qualifier in the Tunisian capital Tunis on Thursday. Last week, Tunisia pipped Libya 1-0. This means Libya does not qualify to go defend their Chan title in Rwanda early next year. Instead, Tunisia play Morocco on Sunday in the last of the three-way North African qualifier to determine who earns the region's ticket to Rwanda. Elsewhere, hosts Togo play Niger, Republic of Congo engage Cameroon, and Mauritania host Mali in the African Nations Championship return leg matches today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sudan host Uganda, Mozambique face Zambia, Gabon play Chad, Angola tackle South Africa, Burkina Faso engage Nigeria, Senegal face Guinea, Lesotho welcome Zimbabwe, Ivory Coast engage Ghana, and Ethiopia play Burundi. In handball, Cameroon's FAP pipped Republic of Congo's Interclub 30-28 in the men's contest at the African Handball Club Championships in Nador, Morocco on Thursday. Egypt's El Ahly dismissed Gabon's Stade Manche 31-22 as Egypt's Zamalek edged Cameroon's Fans 24-20. In the women's contest, Angola's Petro Atletico outclassed Gabon's Phoenix 38-9. Republic of Congo's ABO Sports and Cameroon's TKC drew 22-22 all. Angola's Primero de Agosto outclassed Egypt's Al Ahly 42-16, and Cameroon's FAP dismissed Kenya's Nairobi Water 36-20. In athletics, Kenya's Lucy Kabu is favorite to win the inaugural Saitama International Marathon in the Japan on Sunday. In hockey, the Africa 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympic qualifiers for men's and women's field hockey gets underway in Johannesburg, South Africa today, Friday. So far, Ghana, Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa have each entered both a men's and women's team. Botswana, Egypt, Tanzania, and Zambia have each sent a men's team, while Zimbabwe availed a women's outfit. Finally, South Africa challenged defending champions New Zealand in the semi-final action at the Rugby World Cup in London, England, tomorrow, Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A new report says 30,000 people in South Sudan's Unity State are on the brink of starvation and death amid growing hunger in the war-ravaged country. The report from UN-backed food security experts warns that four Unity State counties could slide into famine conditions by the end of the year without immediate humanitarian assistance. Nearly 4 million South Sudanese in all, about a third of the population, are said to be in a food crisis or emergency, mostly in Unity, Jonglei, and Upper Nile states. A joint statement from three UN agencies called for South Sudan's warring parties to allow unrestricted access to the affected areas. That is it for this Friday, October 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clutty and Ricky Stryer, I'm James Butte, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next on Let's Talk, turncoat. According to the dictionary, the word turncoat means a person who stops being a member of one group in order to join another group that opposes the first group. Do you want to know more? Join host Sande Shomari and his guests discussing turncoat. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Straight Talk Africa, we follow up on Sunday's elections in Ivory Coast and Tanzania as votes are being tallied to determine who will lead both countries for the next 5 years. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests for an in-depth analysis on the elections. That's Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.